We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go! Episode 812 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. It is the final full day before the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft. And so this is the final full day before we know what the Commanders do with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. This is the last full day before the decision. This is like the day before getting married. Are we sure about this? Are we sure about whatever it is that we are about to do? Consider this episode of the podcast the bachelor party to the wedding that is the first round of the 2024 draft on Thursday night. Perhaps this bachelor party will be a calm, relatively not eventful bachelor party, or perhaps this bachelor party will be a wild, life-altering bachelor party leading to a lot of regret. Kind of like in the movie The Hangover, the all-time great movie The Hangover. Who is Leslie Chow in this scenario? That's my question. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chow. Hello and welcome to this Wednesday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. Well, continuing with the wedding theme, speak now or forever hold your peace. Next segment, a final chat before the 2024 draft with Commanders analyst Mark Bullock of Bullock's Film Room, which you can find at markbullock.substack.com. Mark, as a regular guest on this podcast, has been with us throughout the pre-draft process, providing high-level film breakdown style analysis of the three quarterbacks who we believe to be the most likely candidates to be taken by the Commanders with their number 2 overall pick, LSU's Jaden Daniels, North Carolina's Drake May, and Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. When we last spoke with Mark, he had elevated McCarthy to the status of QB2 for the 2024 draft with USC's Caleb Williams as the QB1. But Mark has since conducted one last breakdown of Daniels, May, and McCarthy. Does Mark still want the Commanders to take McCarthy at 2? The answer, next segment, during which we'll also assess the three quarterbacks in a variety of categories. Arm strength, accuracy, arm talent, sack avoidance, highest upside, highest bust potential, and we'll do more preview of the Commanders 2024 draft. Mark Bullock, next segment. Also on the show, the Capitals. They now are down 2-0 to the New York Rangers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A 4-3 loss at the Rangers on Tuesday night in a game filled with penalties and filled with goals on special teams. I'll discuss what happened. I will talk Nationals. They lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers 4-1 at Nationals Park on Tuesday evening. As the Nats did do some good things. The Nats drew 8 walks. The Nats got 5 1/3 scoreless innings from starting pitcher Patrick Corbin. But the Nats also did some not-so-good things. The Nats made 3 outs on the base pass, and 5 Nats relievers combined to allow 4 runs in 3 2/3 innings. And I have an Orioles segment for you. They lost at the Los Angeles Angels 7-4 late night on Tuesday night as starting pitcher Grayson Rodriguez, who had been so good, struggled big time. 7 runs in 4 1/3 innings. Before we get to some feedback, multiple reports on Tuesday that the Commanders, as was indicated by General Manager Adam Peters in his joint pre-draft press conference with Assistant General Manager Lance Newmark last Thursday afternoon, are not trading the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft. From NFL insider Diana Rossini of The Athletic in a post on X on Tuesday morning, quote, teams trying to move up for QB and calling Washington are being told they are not moving, end quote. NFL insiders Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofolo of NFL Network and NFL.com on Tuesday reported something similar from Rappaport in a post on X on Tuesday afternoon, quote, while the Commanders and Patriots have received calls from teams attempting to move up for a QB, Washington has shown no indication it would move per me and Mike Garofolo. New England would move for the right offer, but the Pats just haven't gotten such an offer yet, end quote. None of this is surprising, but it is worth noting that the Commanders trading down in the first round appears to be very unlikely, if not entirely off the table, and that to me communicates that the Commanders really like at least one of the 3 quarterbacks, added Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. Additionally, we have another prominent national NFL person having joined the chorus of national NFL people saying that the Commanders are expected to take Jaden Daniels at 2. Peter Schrager, a host of Good Morning Football on NFL Network and a senior writer for FoxSports.com, he was on the Pat McAfee Show on Tuesday afternoon. Take a listen.
There's been a lot of chatter about maybe some maneuvering happening at number 2 for Jaden to potentially go elsewhere, the Raiders. But Jaden then says, I'll be happy wherever my name's called. What are you hearing about Jaden Daniels? What are you hearing about the Commanders? And what are your thoughts on that? Is that just going to go, is this going to go Williams, Daniels? How do you think it goes?
I think on Friday afternoon, I would have had a different conversation with you, to be honest, Pat. I feel like the last few days, things have settled a bit. And I don't know if there's been conversations with Dan Quinn or with Cliff Kingsbury, but from all the intel that I'm gathering, it sounds like Daniels 2 to the Commanders is a lot more likely now than it might have been on Friday, when it was still likely, but there was bubbles about maybe he wasn't happy about the Top Golf visit, or maybe he's trying to direct where he's going. From what I gather, and his publicist, Denise White, came out with a statement saying he will be happy to go with whatever NFL team that he will be drafted by. I feel like 2 to the Washington Commanders, if I'm going to put my name on something now, I think Jaden Daniels is going to go 2 to Washington. And then they still have 5 picks in the top 100. They can surround him with more.
Yes, they can. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Connor Davis on, yes, the Commanders quarterback decision via their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft. Writes Connor, the quarterback pick at number 2 is going to be potentially very telling of this new regime. We will not know until we give the quarterback a few years, unless he is a true bust of a pick like Josh Rosen, but the quarterbacks could determine how our new front office thinks and acts. Competence. There is a growing consensus that Jaden Daniels is the number 2 quarterback and will be the number 2 overall pick in this draft. No one in the fan base or around the league would blame the Commanders for taking Daniels. On the flip side, the regime won't be considered brilliant for taking the consensus number 2 quarterback either. Daniels won't be too telling if this regime is sharp or dull. Excellence or arrogance. If Washington selects May, McCarthy, a non-quarterback, or trades down, then there will be debate. And if whatever is done works out, we will rave that this new regime was smarter than the rest of the league. Long story short, Daniels may be the safe pick and even the right pick, but the other options are bold and could solidify the new regime or oust it within the next 5 years. Thank you for that email, Connor. Well, I think that there are enough respected people who like Drake May to where the Commanders taking him over Jaden Daniels at 2 would not be seen as this, like, renegade outside-the-box act. Although, to Connor's point, at this point, the most common take is that the Commanders should and will take Daniels at 2. The Commanders taking J.J. McCarthy at 2 would be more of a contrarian act. There are not many people who have him as the QB2 in this draft, although there are some. A good friend of this podcast, NFL draft and college football analyst Thor Nystrom of Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, he loves J.J. McCarthy. But there is enough debate and enough variance of opinion to where if general manager Adam Peters gets the pick right, even via taking Daniels, then Peters will look smart for getting the pick right because there is not an obvious QB2 in this draft. Email from Kendall Hayes on this podcast writes, Kendall, I'm a Northern Virginia guy who has spent the last 11 years in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a big fan of DC sports, and you do a great job of covering all of the local teams, both professional and college. Can't get enough news about the Redskins, and Kendall then has a winking face emoji, Caps, Nationals, and Terps. Yours is a 5-star show. Thanks. P.S. My son, who also lives in Nashville, is former Terps basketball player Eric Hayes. Well, thank you very much for that email, Kendall. Hope that all is well in Nashville. And yeah, we remember Eric Hayes quite well. Eric Hayes, a point guard for Maryland for the 2006-2007 through 2009-2010 seasons. Eric Hayes is number 7 in Maryland men's basketball history in career assists, 1 assist behind the great John Lucas. Hayes, 513 career assists, Lucas, 514 career assists. And something that I remember being said of Eric Hayes a lot during his time with the Terrapins was, he's the son of a coach. I heard that all of the time with Eric Hayes. Well, he's the son of a coach. And yes, Kendall Hayes, an outstanding high school basketball head coach. He was the head coach for the boys varsity team at Potomac High School in Dumfries, Virginia for 21 years. So, Coach Hayes, great to have you as a listener, and a salute to you for your work. You know, Maryland basketball has quite the history of point guards, going back to a certain point guard named Gary Williams in the 1960s, right? Well, the great law firm of Paulson & Nace has quite the history of fighting for victims in a way that no other law firm will. If you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, or if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, always know that Paulson & Nace is there for you. If you have a case, contact Paulson & Nace. Call 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson & Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson & Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson & Nace has won millions of dollars for clients. It was named as part of U.S. News and World Report's Best Law Firms 2024 edition. Paulson & Nace fights for victims of all kinds of situations, including victims of errors made during diagnosis, during surgery, or with medication, victims of injuries caused by dangerous medications or medical devices, as well as defective auto parts, victims of accidents involving cars, trucks, bikes, or motorcycles, victims of deceptive trade practices and false advertising, heck, victims of shady lawyers. If your attorney acts in bad faith, is unethical in his or her counsel, or is negligent in his or her work, you could have a claim for legal malpractice. Paulson & Nace has represented corporate clients throughout the region. Attorneys Chris Nace and Matt Nace are experienced trial attorneys who are not afraid to take cases to trials, and that's because Paulson and Nace wins trials. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. If you are listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can rate the podcast with a star rating. 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. They help us out a lot. Thank you for doing them. We, throughout this process of discussing and dissecting and analyzing what the Commanders should do with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, have leaned on the man who is back with us now for a final quarterback breakdown before the Commanders this Thursday night do whatever they are going to do with that number 2 overall pick. Commanders analyst Mark Bullock, he is exceptional at talking Commanders from an X's and O's standpoint. The three best people at talking Commanders from an X's and O's standpoint, in my opinion, are Mark and two former Redskins tight ends, Logan Paulson and Chris Cooley. Yes, Mark is up there with those guys. Mark does tremendous Commanders film breakdowns. You can read his work on his Substack, Bullock's Film Room, which you can find at markbullock.substack.com. He puts up multiple posts per week. He has written for The Athletic and for The Washington Post, and he is a Commanders fan. You can follow Mark on X at @MarkBullock@FL. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad we're finally here. Yeah, it's been a long off season, but excited to finally see what they're going to do.
For sure. Now, before we get to your last thoughts on the Commanders quarterback decision at 2, you are in Europe. For those who don't know, Mark, when he comes on this podcast, comes to us from Europe. Sometimes from his native England, sometimes from Sweden. England is 5 hours ahead of Eastern time in the United States. Sweden is 6 hours ahead of Eastern time in the United States. So will you be staying up into the overnight hours on Thursday night and Friday night to take in what the Commanders do in rounds 1 through 3 of this most important 2024 draft for our team?
Yep. Yeah, I think the draft starts at, what is it, 8 p.m. on Thursday night for you guys, Eastern, which is about 1 in the morning for me. So, yeah, it's going to be a long night Thursday, and Friday will be another long night. And, you know, in the past it would have been like, oh, they pick at 2 and then that will be them done. But we've heard about them possibly trading up into the first round again for a tackle. So it's going to be a very long night. But, you know, that's I'd rather be up doing that than, you know, doing a job in a store stacking shelves at 9 in the morning. So, yeah, it's much more fun to be talking about football.
Very true. You all along have had USC's Caleb Williams as your QB1 in the 2024 draft. As we all know, he's almost certainly being taken by the Chicago Bears with their number 1 overall pick. We last spoke on episode 802 of this podcast. You at that time had moved Michigan's J.J. McCarthy to being your QB2 in the 2024 draft, with LSU's Jaden Daniels as your QB3 and North Carolina's Drake May as your QB4. But you did say that you were going to do one final analysis of the quarterbacks. You on your Substack on Monday put up a really good post, headline quote, "Revisiting breakdowns of Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy," end quote. So, as we approach Thursday night, who do you want the Commanders to take it to?
So obviously Caleb Williams would still be the number one guy, but we all know that he's going to Chicago. So for me, after going back over the past week and rewatching pretty much all of these guys for 5 or 6 games, I came away feeling like Jaden Daniels just makes so many explosive plays that he's just kind of too enticing to pass up. So for me, Jaden Daniels, I'm kind of putting back as QB two. I have JJ McCarthy still as QB three behind him, and I would be just as happy taking McCarthy as I would be Daniels. I think McCarthy can be a very, very good quarterback in the NFL. And then I have Drake May. The thing that stood out with Drake May was there was just the misses that I talked about on here a lot before, that they just stood out as kind of glaring compared to the other guys. And it's that you love all the other attributes to him, but the misses just stood out. And so Drake May had to come forth. But again, I think you could easily justify taking any of them. And I think Washington can easily justify taking any of them at two, whichever one they decide to take.
In watching all of these guys again, did anything new strike you, or were just your previous thoughts reinforced?
I think I came away from Daniels and Drake May kind of reinforced with how I felt about them, where Daniels is this incredible explosive player, both as a passer and a runner, where the deep ball is so good. I went actually got two more games I hadn't watched of him before, and he just kept hitting those slot fades down the field with beautiful touch and accuracy. And you just think, God, this guy's a really good deep ball passer. And then obviously, you know, if something breaks down, he can take off running and pick up 40 yards before the defense knows what's happened. So there was so much explosiveness to his game. I do still worry about the injury risk, because even in the new games that I watched, he was still being reckless with his body and subjecting himself to hits he didn't need to take. And as I said, with Drake May, the misses kind of stood out even more, on top of, you know, the rest of his talent and the beautiful balls down the field, the attacking the middle of the field, the willingness to throw into tight windows, is all really nice. And there's a lot to like about Drake May, but the misses make me think, and it's the misses that are so inconsistent, because I'll get onto JJ McCarthy in a minute, but McCarthy had a few misses, but they were a consistent type of miss. Whereas Drake May was sailing one throw above the receiver's head on one play, and then he was short hopping it on the next, and then he was missing left and then missing right, throwing out in front of receivers and then throwing behind them. So their misses were just all over the place, which makes it a lot more difficult to kind of understand what the issue is with his footwork and try to fix that. Whereas JJ McCarthy, the thing that I found was he's kind of a line drive thrower. He's only really got a fastball. He's just throwing as hard as he can to every single receiver. And you'd like to see him be able to throw with a little bit more touch, especially down the field. But he does also have a few misses to his left. But they were consistent misses. And you could see it was a mechanical thing where he's overstriding with his front foot. So when a quarterback drops back straight and then they try to swing to the left to throw to the left, they often overstride with their left foot and it kind of swings out too far and it kind of pulls their body across and drags them over and causes them to almost fall over. So they're not able to drive over their front foot. They're kind of falling away from the throw and that causes the misses. And that's an easier mechanical fix. You can teach kind of what they call a dovetail drop, where on the last few steps of your drop, rather than dropping back straight and then trying to swing your foot open, you kind of dovetail your drop where the last few steps you bend to your right to open up to your left, and makes it much easier to align yourself. So that's one way you can see an easy fix for the misses McCarthy has, because they're all consistent. Whereas Drake May, they're so inconsistent. It's like, what exactly is the issue here? There's so much going on. That's kind of where I came away from those guys after rewatching them.
All right. So Mark Bullock is officially endorsing the Commanders taking Jaden Daniels with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. What I'd like to do is throw out various aspects of quarterbacking and get your takes on which of the three quarterbacks, Daniels, Drake May, or JJ McCarthy, is the best at each aspect. So if I say mobility, you'd obviously say Daniels. I won't even ask you about mobility, because it is rather obvious that Daniels is the best. So let's start with arm strength.
I would say it'd be between McCarthy and May. I've seen I think off platform, probably Drake May, but I think when he has his feet set, I feel like McCarthy can really fire the ball in there a little bit better than May. But I'd say it's between those two, probably just give the edge to May.
Accuracy.
Accuracy down the field is definitely Jaden Daniels. Accuracy underneath is more JJ McCarthy. Drake May, when he gets his feet right, he can be pinpoint accurate. He gets his feet wrong too often and is very inaccurate. So, down the field, Daniels, underneath and intermediate, McCarthy.
Arm talent. Now, that can be defined in different ways, but however you define arm talent, which of the three quarterbacks has the most arm talent?
Yeah, for me, arm talent would be the ability to still be able to drive the ball despite not being able to set your feet and being able to get off platform and create by yourself. And I guess for me, that would be Drake May. Jaden Daniels needs to have his feet set for the most part to be able to deliver the ball. JJ McCarthy has the ability to create and can do some nice things off script, but his arm's probably not quite as good off script as Drake May. May can really flick the ball down the field when he needs to, even with his feet completely offset. So,
sack avoidance.
That would probably go to McCarthy. Drake May does a nice job of moving around the pocket, and McCarthy is still a little bit of a work in progress with that. But May also kind of ran himself into a few sacks. And McCarthy had a few plays where he's like scrambling out and he could quite easily have thrown the ball away and took some sacks. But that's kind of an immaturance thing. And he you would think he would grow out of that. Whereas Drake May was kind of, he would try to step up in the pocket and scramble around and run himself into some sacks. So I think probably McCarthy is the better one for sack avoidance.
Highest upside. To me, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy all have very high upsides, which is a big part of why this is such a debate. But does one out of the three stand out to you in terms of having the highest upside?
I think the highest upside, if you take their best case scenario, you'd probably say Drake May has the highest upside because he's got the biggest frame, probably just about the strongest arm, and the ability to create off script is fantastic. You obviously need to fix the misses underneath and the layups, but the highest upside, it would be him. I'd say Jaden Daniels is right there behind him, and I'd say JJ McCarthy is pretty much right there behind Jaden Daniels. So they're all pretty close, but I'd give the edge to Drake May.
Highest bust potential?
That would also be Drake May, I think, because the misses. I'd kind of also be tempted to talk about Daniels in that, but I don't want to say a guy could be a bust because of an injury risk. You don't want to project an injury risk. So if we're taking that kind of off the table, then Drake May because of the misses.
It's tough, man. I feel like in so many other NFL drafts, each guy, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy could be the QB1. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I think, certainly, definitely think these guys all would be in consideration for QB1 in a lot of draft classes. I don't necessarily think any are better than like an Andrew Luck or Trevor Lawrence or like Caleb Williams. I think those guys are kind of in their own elite tier, but these guys are all very close in a tier just behind that. And so, yeah, in a lot of other draft classes, I think they would all be pretty well established as the number one pick.
We're talking with Commanders analyst Mark Bullock of Bullock's Film Room, which you can find at markbullock.substack.com. A few questions with which we'll focus specifically on Jaden Daniels versus Drake May. I last week had Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema on back-to-back episodes of the podcast for a two-part conversation, episodes 807 and 808. Trevor on episode 807 said that he prefers May over Daniels, but even Trevor said that Daniels' mechanics are far superior to May's. I know that you feel the same way. What stands out in comparing the mechanics of Daniels with the mechanics of May?
Yeah, he's got certainly a lot cleaner mechanics than May. I don't know if I'd put them as perfect, but it's certainly a lot more refined. The release is much quicker. The release is really, really good. The feet can get a little bit off at times, but generally when he has a clean pocket and he's allowed to just operate from a clean pocket and he's working on rhythm, they're really good mechanics and the ball comes out really quickly. So that's a real big positive. Sometimes if there's a little bit of pressure, he can kind of fade away from throws and lean back a little bit, and that can cause him some issues. Generally speaking, when he's just operating from inside the pocket and then he has some time to play on rhythm, then yeah, his mechanics are pretty good.
Another aspect of Jaden Daniels versus Drake May is each guy's supporting cast this past season. Daniels had two stud receivers in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. May's supporting cast was not nearly as good. In studying Daniels, to what extent did you see his success as a function of throwing to guys like Nabers and Thomas?
Yeah, I don't think it's just a function of playing on a great offense with good receivers. The thing that stood out to me with the receivers is the ability after the catch. You'd see Daniels make a really good read and find his receiver over the middle or down the field or whatever. And then you'd see Nabers make a catch and then break three tackles and take a 20-yard gain into a 40-yard gain, right? That's where the really good receiver part plays into it. The other part of it is, you know, they ran a lot of slot fades and those are good situations for receivers to win one-on-one. And so you do need receivers to win one-on-one, but Daniels also did a really nice job of providing excellent passes for those receivers to win one-on-one. So I don't kind of take that away from him. I think Daniels shows a good process. So he's able to work through reads. He's not just like zeroing in on, oh, this is Malik Nabers is here, I'm just going there. If he has the situation where it's one-on-one and he can get Nabers down the field, sure, he'll take it. But you'd want the quarterback to do that in the NFL anyway. If you had Terry McLaurin one-on-one against the backup corner, you want your quarterback to be like, I'm taking that matchup, I'm going for it. Whereas if it's a situation where actually their top corner is on Nabers, it's going to be a kind of 50-50. He's more than happy to progress to the other side of the field and work a different receiver or a different concept. So I think the process is good enough there that he's not just zeroing in on one or two receivers. He's spreading the ball around and he's showing that he's able to work through reads and progressions. So that isn't a concern for me.
As we know, there is a big part of the Commanders' quarterback decision with this number two overall pick that we do not know. And that is who Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy are as people. Are they hard workers? Are they good teammates? Are they accountable? Do they love football or simply play it because they can, etc.? The situation from last week with the Commanders conducting their final batch of pre-draft visits for this draft in a group manner, including the team hosting all three quarterbacks and Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr. at the same time. And the team took the guys to Topgolf, and then one of Daniels' agents, Ron Butler, he on X, seemingly expressed unhappiness with the group-style pre-draft visits. Do you put stock into any of that?
I put a little bit of stock into it. It depends where it's coming from. If it's coming from Daniels himself, then you obviously put a lot of stock into that, because the whole point of the trip to Topgolf with all the other prospects was to see how people interacted. And, you know, if you're drafting him second overall, you're about to put him in a locker room full of 90 guys that he doesn't know, and you want to see how he interacts with those guys. So this kind of exercise helps do that. And so if it's coming from him and he didn't like it, then you would put stock into that and you would be a little bit concerned about that. But I kind of feel like it probably came more from the agent, because the agent's job is to prepare his client for every possible scenario, and they would have prepared them best they can for the one-on-one meeting and all the kind of questions he would get and how to answer, you know, bad plays on film and good plays on film and that kind of thing. They might not necessarily have been prepared for this setting. So if you're an agent, I can understand why you'd be kind of frustrated about it, because you haven't prepared your client for it. So when that news breaks that suddenly 20 prospects, including the other top quarterbacks, are going with your guy to Topgolf, and then they're all being interviewed at the same time, it does kind of scare you into being like, oh, I didn't prepare him for that. So I can understand why an agent wouldn't necessarily like that process. And I think probably in future years, agents might be a little bit more tentative about agreeing to that kind of thing. But if it's just come from the agent, I'm not concerned about it at all, because, you know, that doesn't necessarily speak for Jaden Daniels. But if it does come from Jaden Daniels, then yeah, it's a concern. And so you kind of have to try to assess where it, exactly it's come from. And Washington will be best positioned to know that, because obviously they were there. They would have been able to see if Jaden Daniels was not happy about being there and the situation going on. So, if Daniels was there and happy and participating and enjoying himself, then they'll know it's come from the agent. And then they're not too worried about it.
There now is a growing expectation that the Commanders are going to take Jaden Daniels at 2. Does it feel that way to you, that the Commanders are going to take Daniels at 2?
It certainly sounds like that, but I think you never really know. The thing they've done this year has been really good at keeping everything tight, and I think they genuinely wouldn't have made a final decision until this week. So that makes it a lot easier to keep everything tight if you haven't made the final decision yet. But I think they probably lean towards Daniels. I think he's probably just too enticing to pass up. There's too much there to say we're going to pass on that. Obviously the character stuff, the leadership stuff, the off the field stuff that we talked about that we are not privy to, that might give someone else a lead over him, be it McCarthy or May, or someone else. You know, maybe they feel like he's not the right character that they're looking for. But we don't know that. He could well be exactly the right character they're looking for. So if he is, then I would think that just confirms that he's the best guy. But I think that's probably the only reason they would probably lead somewhere else is if they feel like someone else is maybe a slightly better character fit. But I have no reason to believe that Daniels wouldn't be a good character fit.
The pressure on Commanders general manager Adam Peters to get this number 2 overall pick right is immense. But the team does have 5 other picks in the top 100 in the 2024 draft. Can this be a successful draft for the Commanders without them hitting on the number 2 overall pick?
It's definitely a large focus on the quarterback. I think it can be a successful draft without hitting on the quarterback if you'd have to hit on all the other picks, though. You're going to have to, if they trade up for a tackle, that tackle is going to have to be, you know, Trent Williams or something like that. And if you draft a pass rusher in the second round, they're going to have to be really, really good. And whoever else you're drafting is going to have to be really productive and potential long-term guys for you. So they don't necessarily have to hit on the quarterback. But I think hitting on the quarterback is obviously the number one goal of this draft. And if you do that, then that sets them up for a very long time to be successful here in Washington.
Final question, spinning the conversation to after the Commanders have made their number 2 overall pick, whoever the draftee is your inclination for him to be the Commanders starting quarterback in week 1 of the 2024 season, or more for him to be the QB2 for a while?
I don't think you have to start them right away. I think if you have a reason to sit them, like if you take, say, Drake May, and you think these mechanical issues where he's missing things underneath far too often, if you feel like him playing is going to prevent him from fixing those mechanics, then you sit him and you make him work on those mechanics until they are entrenched in his muscle memory and he's able to play in the league without reverting back to his old mechanics. But otherwise, like, I understand the argument of letting guys sit because you see a lot of quarterbacks be successful sitting, but I think you have to have a reason for sitting them. Like Patrick Mahomes, people talk about, like, he sat for most of his rookie year, but Alex Smith was playing fantastic football at that time. They drafted Mahomes a year ahead of when they needed to draft the quarterback because Alex Smith was playing really good football, and they were doing like what the Packers did with first Aaron Rodgers and a kind of succession plan, and then Jordan Love. So if you have that, that's kind of a luxury pick, whereas Washington don't have that established guy in the building Obviously, Marcus Mariota could start if they need to, but he's not someone that you're expecting to play at a super high level. So I'd want them to have a reason to sit someone. And as I say, if it's Drake May's mechanics are going to take a while to fix and he will revert back to his old mechanics if he plays too early, then absolutely sit him. But I think a guy like Jaden Daniels, you would start right away. I think a guy like JJ McCarthy, one of his biggest issues is just inexperience, and he's not going to gain experience sitting on the sideline. So you'd want to play him right away. So I think it's pretty likely that whoever they take will play right away, unless there is a significant reason to not play.
Excellent stuff. We will see what happens. Commanders analyst Mark Bullock of Bullock's Film Room, which you can find at markbullock.substack.com. Mark, enjoy the draft, and we will have a lot to talk about the next time we speak.
Thanks for having me.
All right. If you are a Commanders fan like Mark and me, now more than ever is the time to check out bgobsession.com. You can placate your burgundy and gold obsession at bgobsession.com. BG Obsession, or BGO, has been the home of the most knowledgeable, friendly, and passionate Washington fans on the web since 2009. If you are tired of the toxicity of the Commanders conversation on X, give bgobsession.com a try. BGO is a special place at which you can join your fellow fans for some smart football discussion, great contests, game day chats, and even lifelong friendships. So what are you waiting for? Visit and join BGO at bgobsession.com, home to your burgundy and gold obsession.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, if you are a Capitals fan like me, you probably know that a two-game lead in a series in the Stanley Cup playoffs does not mean much, as our Caps over the years have lost quite a few series in which the team held two-game leads. And so the Caps, in trailing 2-0 in their best-of-seven first-round series against the Metropolitan Division-winning and President's Trophy-winning New York Rangers in the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs, are not done. But yeah, the Caps are in a not-so-great spot. Tuesday night, a 4-3 loss at the Rangers in Game 2, this off the 4-1 loss at the Rangers in Game 1. Charlie Lindgren was the Caps starting goaltender for Game 2, as was the case in Game 1, but he again was not at his best. He stopped just 23 of the 27 shots on goal that he faced. Lindgren, per Natural Stat Trick, stopped all 6 of the high danger shots on goal that he faced, but just 7 of the 10 medium danger shots on goal that he faced, and 9 of the 10 low danger shots on goal that he faced. The Caps did win the puck possession possession battle. In terms of 5-on-5 play, the Caps per natural stat trick had 45 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Rangers 37, including 6 5-on-5 high danger shot attempts to the Rangers 3. However, this was a wild game in terms of special teams. The two teams combined for 11 minor penalties, 6 by the Caps and 5 by the Rangers. And by the way, how about what happened with the Caps top line right wing TJ Oshie? He left the game in the third period off taking a heavy hit from Rangers forward Artemi Panarin, a.k.a. the Breadman, in the Caps defensive zone, but no penalty was called on the Breadman, despite him pretty clearly making contact with Oshie's head. And the Caps themselves got called for a penalty, as the guy who did get called for a penalty in that sequence was Caps top line center Connor McMichael. He got a 2-minute minor for roughing. Oshie did return to the game, but this was Caps head coach Spencer Carberry during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night on what he was told by officials about no penalty being called on Artemi Panarin for that hit on TJ Oshie.
They said it wasn't a minor penalty, was the only explanation I got. I asked a few follow-up questions with regards to leaving feet, point of contact. And the one that is tricky is the spotter removes them. And that's always, so to me, yeah, I know they don't. We watch a video at the beginning of the year of what they're looking for from concussion symptoms or a hit and who needs to be removed. So to me, though, when the spotters remove them, there has to be some type of contact with the head. And so that's where I was a little bit confused of him being removed by the spotters and then no minor penalty on the ice.
So a lot of penalties in this game, too. Just 2 of the 7 goals in game 2 were even strength goals. So the Caps went just 4-6 on the penalty kill. The Caps gave up a shorthanded goal, which was by Rangers defenseman Keandre Miller, 16:52 into the second period for a 4-2 Rangers lead. As top line left wing Alex Ovechkin in the neutral zone had the puck taken away from him by Rangers forward Mika Zibanejad, and the ensuing Rangers possession in the Caps defensive zone resulted in Miller scoring on a snapshot from the slot to beat Charlie Lindgren. Alex Ovechkin did not have a good game for a second time in as many games in this series. Ovechkin on Tuesday night, no points, just 1 shot on goal, and just 4 total shot attempts. He did have a team-high 6 hits, but Ovechkin in game 1, no points and no shots on goal, though he did have 7 total shot attempts, but 5 of his 7 total shot attempts were blocked. Spencer Carberry, during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night, on the turnover by Alex Ovechkin and on how Ovi is playing in this series so far.
The play, he gets a puck cross ice and he's getting pressure right away, so he just all of a sudden is surprised, and then he bobbles it and they turn it over. I thought the first 2 games is looks a little bit off. He's struggling. I mean, it's hard. Like, it's the playoffs on the road. He's getting a tough matchup. So he's, but I mean, it's 2 games, right? We're going back home now. We'll get an opportunity to be able to control the matchup for him, and he can flip it. Like, that's one thing about O. He can flip it in 1 game, and now he can all of a sudden be a difference maker and help us win a game or be a driver in winning us a game on home ice. And look, there's no doubt we're in a difficult spot going back home, but being able to play on home ice, and this is a great building to play in on the road, and you can tell, but I've been this year playing in Washington, coaching this team, and there's been some games that I was caught off guard by the energy in the building and our fan base. And so game 3 back in our building, a playoff game, I'm excited to see what that looks like. And we're going to go home, and this team, just similar to what happened tonight, as the mistakes, all the little things that happened, the icings, all the things I talked about, fights to the bitter end, right? And we're right there against the best team in the National Hockey League. So I don't think it'll be any different in game three of the rest of this series.
Yeah, the Caps need more from Alex Ovechkin. There's no doubt about that. A bright spot for the Caps in Game 2 was them going 2-5 on the power play. Second-line center Dylan Strome, he scored a power play goal 4:14 into the second period to tie the game at 2. Strome tapped in the puck from right in front of the net off a great pass by second-line right wing Tom Wilson off Wilson skating through the right circle. And Wilson, he scored a power play goal 11:45 into the third period to cut the Caps deficit to 4-3 on a deflection from the slot off the puck being sent toward the net by third line center Hendrix LaPierre from the point. Also key on that goal was third line right wing Sonny Milano, who set a great screen in standing right in front of Rangers goaltender Igor Shesterkin. The Caps' other goal came from Connor McMichael. He scored an unassisted even strength goal 5:09 into the first period for a 1-0 Caps lead as McMichael collected a loose puck in the slot and fired a wrist shot that beat Igor Shesterkin. But look, the Caps cannot afford to not get really good goaltending, commit 6 minor penalties regardless of the officiating, go just 4-6 on the penalty kill, give up a shorthanded goal, and expect to beat the Rangers, who are a really good team. There's also the situation for the Caps defense corps. You know, the Caps bottom 4 defensemen for this game too included 2 guys recently recalled from the Caps AHL affiliate, the Hershey Bears, talking about Dylan McElrath and Lucas Johansson, as the Caps were without a lot of defensemen. Defenseman Vincent Iorio did not play due to the upper body injury that he suffered on the hit by Rangers forward Alexis Lafreniere in the second period of Game 1. Defenseman Nick Jensen remains out due to injury that he suffered in taking a nasty hit from Tampa Bay Lightning forward Michael Asimont in the Caps 4-2 win over the Eastern Conference wildcard winning Lightning at Capital One Arena on April 13th. Defenseman Rasmus Sandin remains out due to an upper body injury that he suffered in the Caps 3-2 overtime loss to the Ottawa Senators at Capital One Arena on April 7th. And defenseman Ethan Bear remains out due to being in the NHL's and NHL Players Association's Player Assistance Program. The Caps remain without a lot of defensemen. Game 3 in this series is on Friday night and at Capital One Arena. The Caps host the Rangers Friday night at 7, and then Game 4 is at Capital One Arena Sunday night at 8. Well, the Nationals on Tuesday evening rallied against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Nats, while trailing 4-1 in the bottom of the ninth, drew 3 walks and had a single, all off Dodgers reliever and former Orioles prospect Evan Phillips. The Nats had the bases loaded with 2 outs and with one of the team's best hitters this season, Jesse Winker, at the plate. But Winker struck out swinging to end the game, and the Nats lost to the Dodgers 4-1 at Nationals Park in Game 1 of a 3-game series. So the Nats for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 10-12. Some big-time base-running blunders by the Nats in this game. Luis Garcia Jr., he is the Nats starting second baseman and number 8 batter, went 1-for-3 with a single and a walk, but Garcia in the bottom of the ninth off a 1-out walk was tagged out in a rundown between third base and home plate on a 1-out single to right field by C.J. Abrams, as Nats third base coach Ricky Gutierrez appeared to put up a very late stop sign for Garcia, and the trailing runner on the play, Joey Gallo, appeared to misread the play. But a terrible base running moment for the Nats. I mentioned C.J. Abrams. He is the Nats starting shortstop and number 1 batter. Went 3-for-5 with 3 singles. So another good game for Abrams, but he got tagged out on the base pass. Abrams in the bottom of the 7th had a 1-out infield single on a tapper to the right side of the infield, despite having been down in the count at 1.02. But Abrams then seconds later was picked off and tagged out in an attempted steal of second base. Also, Nick Senzel, he is the Nats starting DH and number 7 batter, went 0-for-3 with a walk and 2 strikeouts. He in the bottom of the 4th drew a one-out walk, but he then was picked off and tagged out in an attempted steal of second base. The Nats in this game made three outs on the base paths. However, Nats manager Davey Martinez, during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night, was not all that upset about the outs on the base paths. Take a listen.
You know what? You know, we're going to be aggressive. We really are. I mean, people are praising us for the way we run the bases. That's just how we're going to play. So, you know, we just got to understand, when it's 1-0, we got to try to score. We got to try to get guys on second base scoring position. The last play, I thought Ricky did a really good job. I really did. I mean, Garcia's run didn't mean nothing. I mean, we're down three runs. Joey just, had his head down, was running full speed. That kind of stuff happens. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Those situations like that, we just got to run our heads up.
Yeah, that to me was a spot for Davey Martinez to be more demanding of his players. To say, hey, three outs on the base pass, not good enough. And instead, Davey was kind of ho-hum about that. I was not a fan of that. And the thing is, even when the Nats on Tuesday evening did do something well on the base pass, something negative happened. Lane Thomas, he is the Nats' starting right fielder and number two batter, went 1-for-3 with a single and a stolen base, but he left the game due to getting hurt. Thomas in the bottom of the fifth had a two-out single to left center field and a steal of second base, but he on the steal hurt his left leg. He eventually left the game, and Davey Martinez, during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night, said that Thomas was to undergo an MRI exam on his left knee. That's scary. The Nats for this game scored just one run and totaled just seven hits, which were comprised of a double and six singles. But the Nats did draw an outstanding eight walks and did go 3-for-9 with runners in scoring position. But somehow the Nats scored just one run, which came on an RBI bunt single. Jacob Young, he is the Nats starting center fielder and number nine batter, went 1-for-3 with an RBI bunt single. Young in a Nats one-run second had a one-out first pitch RBI bunt single to the first base side of the infield for a 1-0 Nats lead. Young initially was ruled out, but Davey Martinez successfully challenged the play to get Young that single. Young did have some defensive problems in this game. He, in the top of the fifth, committed a fielding error on a two-out single by Mookie Betts to right center field, as Young bobbled his handling of the baseball, allowing Betts to get to second base. And Young, in the top of the sixth, bobbled his handling of the baseball on a two-out RBI single by Kike Hernandez to center field to tie the game at one, although Hernandez did not advance a base, and Young ultimately was not charged with an error on the play. But a big problem for the Nats in this 4-1 loss to the Dodgers on Tuesday evening was the bullpen. Davey Martinez has been using a lot of relievers, in part due to starting pitchers not lasting long in games, but also due to these Nats relievers not being good enough to where they last for long in games. Davey on Tuesday evening used five Nats relievers, and they combined to allow four runs in 3 2/3 innings. Derek Law allowed a run in a third of an inning. He, in the top of the sixth, faced four batters, but got just one out as he gave up a two-out first-pitch single by Teoscar Hernandez on a grounder into center field, issued a two-out five-pitch walk of Max Muncy, and then gave up a two-out RBI single by Kike Hernandez to center field to tie the game at one. Jordan Weems faced four batters and got three outs. Hunter Harvey officially allowed two runs in one inning. He faced six batters, but got just three outs, including giving up a one-out pinch RBI double by James Outman to right field for a 2-1 Dodgers lead in the top of the eighth, despite Harvey having had Outman down in the count at 1.12. Now, James Outman is a lefty batter. He came into this game having struggled mightily against left-handed pitching in his major league career, but the Nats now do not have a lefty in their bullpen. The Nats, on Tuesday afternoon, announced having placed their lone lefty reliever, Robert Garcia, on the 15-day injured list, retroactive to April 21st, due to influenza, as that has been making its way around the Nats. A catcher, Keibert Ruiz, has been on the 10-day injured list retroactively since April 12th due to influenza. So the Nats for now do not have a lefty in their bullpen. They apparently do not have a lefty in the minors who they felt comfortable calling up. So they instead called up Jacob Barnes. The Nats on Tuesday afternoon announced having selected the contract of Barnes from AAA Rochester, and as a corresponding roster move, having designated infielder slash outfielder Jake Alou for assignment. Barnes on Tuesday evening made his Nats regular season debut. He officially tossed a third of a scoreless inning, but he faced two batters and got just one out. The first batter he faced gave up a two-out opposite field RBI single by the Dodgers' number nine batter, Miguel Rojas, on a 1-2 pitch for a 3-1 Dodgers lead in the top of the eighth. And then another Barnes, Matt Barnes, he allowed one run in one inning. He, in the top of the ninth, gave up a leadoff homer by Shohei Ohtani on a moonshot to right field for a 4-1 Dodgers lead. That homer went a projected 450 feet per Statcast. The Nats do not have another scheduled off day until Monday, May 6th. That is a ways away. Davey Martinez cannot continue to have to use four or five relievers game after game. The Nats' starting pitcher on Tuesday evening was their worst starting pitcher so far this regular season, Patrick Corbin, but he did well. I give Corbin credit. 5 1/3 scoreless innings. He gave up just three hits, which were a double and two singles. He did issue three walks. He did record just three strikeouts. He threw 86 pitches, 50 strikes versus 36 balls. Corbin got pulled from the game after facing the Dodgers' number three batter, Freddie Freeman, for a third time. I had no problem with that. You are asking for trouble if you have Corbin go too deep against an opposing lineup for a third time in a game. Understand, Corbin came into this game with an ERA of 8.06 over four starts in this regular season. Game two for the Nats against the Dodgers Wednesday evening at 6:45. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, we late night on Tuesday night had something that we have not had much of lately, an Orioles loss. They lost at the Los Angeles Angels 7-4 in game two of a three-game series. This was just the Orioles' second loss in nine games. So the O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 15-8. A very rough outing for the man who had been the Orioles' best starting pitcher so far this regular season, Grayson Rodriguez. The man known as Grayrod, he came into this game with an ERA at 2.63 over four starts in this regular season, but he late night on Tuesday night got ripped. Grayrod allowed seven runs in 4 1/3 innings. He gave up a whopping 11 hits, which were made up of a home run, five doubles and five singles. He did have seven strikeouts versus one walk, and he did throw a lot of strikes, 82 pitches, 55 strikes versus just 27 balls. Here was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame session with reporters late night on Tuesday night on Grayson Rodriguez, and then you'll hear a follow-up exchange.
Well, I just didn't think he executed. You know, just looking back on the replays, a lot of balls that were kind of middle of the plate, thigh high, wrong parts of the plate to the game plan, and it made him pay for it.
How surprising was that command? For the past 6 months, he's been really great.
Yeah, it kept, maybe just an off night for him. He's had a few good starts here to start the year, and tonight for me, just the stuff was fine. Threw some good sliders to Cano, but had a tough time throwing sliders with anybody else that were kind of backing up in the middle part of the plate. You know, poorly executed fastball to Trout there to lead off the game, and just didn't command the pitches for me tonight.
Yeah, we all get it. Bad starts are going to happen. But Grayson Rodriguez in this game was surprisingly bad and was very bad. The Orioles bullpen, which had been bad, was good late night on Tuesday night. Three Orioles relievers, Dylan Tate, Keegan Aiken, and Johan Ramirez. They combined for 3 2/3 scoreless and hitless innings with 5 strikeouts. The Orioles offense in this game, just so-so. The O's scored 4 runs. The O's totaled 8 hits, which were a home run, a double, and 6 singles. The O's worked 3 walks, but the O's also struck out 11 times and went just 1 for 7 with runners in scoring position. Gunnar Henderson, he is the Orioles starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1 for 4 with a solo homer and an RBI sac fly. Henderson aided Orioles 1-run seventh, had a one-out solo homer to right field on a 1-2 pitch to cut the Orioles deficit to 7-4. The homer went a projected 414 feet per Statcast and was his team-leading 7th home run of this regular season. Also, Jackson Holliday had a hit. The consensus number one prospect in baseball. He has been struggling something fierce, but he is the Orioles starting second baseman and number 9 batter. Went 1 for 4 with a single and 2 strikeouts. He now is a 2 for 34 with 2 singles, 2 walks, and 18 strikeouts since the O's on April 10th promoted him from AAA Norfolk. And we did have another highly regarded Orioles prospect, Heston Kerstad, in the Orioles lineup. The O's on Tuesday afternoon, as expected, announced having recalled Kerstad from AAA Norfolk, but he is the Orioles starting right fielder and number 8 batter, went 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts. Game 3 for the O's at the Angels Wednesday afternoon at 4:07. Dean Kramer will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show, episode 813, will provide you with more on the Commanders, as I'll give you my final thoughts before the 2024 NFL Draft. Also on Thursday's show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats are home to the Los Angeles Dodgers Wednesday evening at 6:45 for Game 2 of a 3-game series. The O's are at the Los Angeles Angels Wednesday afternoon at 4:07 for Game 3 of a 3-game series. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.